I'm going to open the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development for Wednesday, May 23rd, 2007. Chair Witt is running a little late. He's in traffic. He'll be here in a few minutes. But we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 665A. And Gary Neal and Amy Joyce and Jerry Bohan, if you could all come forward, that'd be great. So you folks can decide who starts and
If you don't mind, I'll just make a brief comment.
Great. That'd be
Vice Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow, located in Morrow County, Oregon, which the project that we're discussing here today is located on port property. I wanted to at least pass on to you, which I think you have in front of you, a copy of the transportation analysis that developed during our land use approval process. And I know that doesn't look like a lot, but that represents about a $250,000 investment. So so it was extensively reviewed and analyzed and discussed during that period, and tried to accommodate the transportation questions and issues that were briefly commented on at the hearing the other day. And I just wanted to show you the kind of effort that's gone into trying to address those kind of concerns. And I know that with the proposed amendments to this legislation, actually, we believe that the transportation impact will be less rather than more because of the trying to get people to come to the facilities on a longer period of time as opposed to impacted in a single day event. And so, so we're excited about the opportunity to even mitigate further those traffic impacts that are considered in that analysis. So that's all I wanted to share with you this morning, and thank you.
Any questions for?
Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Riley. Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation. On Monday, I came up and testified briefly, and there were some questions about the department's position on whether we thought traffic impacts from things like a 100,000-person event could be mitigated. And so I brought along Jerry Bohart, who is the division administrator of the department's transportation planning section. So and I guess any questions that you folks have, Jerry is the person to talk to.
Great.
Good morning.
So we were just in the middle of a panel here and suggesting that Jerry could answer questions from the department. So,
thank you very much, Vice Chair Riley. Mm-hmm. Please proceed.
So, I think we've had two testimonies, and Jerry's here just to answer questions.
Oh, just to answer questions.
I believe that's the situation, because we had some questions about impacts of large gatherings on the traffic pattern, and
okay.
That's what she came to answer the questions about.
All right. Thank you. Committee members? Yes.
I'll start out. I don't remember what my question was, but I know it had something to do with needing an additional lane on Interstate 84. My concern is basically they're talking about having transient lodging, I think, if I recall, in the neighborhood of 250 units. And with the idea that there's possibly 80 to 100,000 people coming to Boardman for this event, to me that means 99,000 of them are going to get back on the road. And how is Interstate 84 going to accommodate that?
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey. We haven't done the full analysis with the changes that are being proposed versus what came back in 2001, but there is a recognition that we would need to do interchange improvements as well as extend I-84. So we would need to figure out the analysis and also look at the impact essentially down to Portland. So it is doable, probably, but having not done the work at this point, it's uncertain what the costs will be and exactly what the needs will be. So.
Can I follow up with for just a moment? So, you know, along those lines, I appreciate you haven't done the analysis, but I recognize that they're trying to stagger how many people come on certain days, but if the main event is on one day, you know, I would think that over at least half of that population is going to be on the road. I guess simply put, is that going to require an additional lane to I-84 between Portland and Boardman?
I'm not a traffic analysis person. I do the planning, so I can't answer that question at this point in time. There'll be a need for probably an additional lane between the two interchanges. How far down we will need to go is unclear. A lot of times, if it's a one-day event, you can do different traffic demand management issues that just deal with that one-day event rather than the need for an additional lane over just that one peak period in time. So that's part of the analysis that's also done as part of this is understanding when the events are going to occur, how they're going to impact the traffic that normally goes through, and then, you know, what can we do just kind of on that one event basis. So that's part of the analysis that occurs as well. So we try to minimize the impacts and minimize the costs for those types of events.
Hold on just a minute. Representative Polvey, did you finish?
Yes, I guess so.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gollum, get you on deck.
You've been so kind to establish that you're not a traffic manager in Oregon. I was wondering if you were in Washington, because my questions are going to move north a bit. But don't we have a similar situation in Washington where they have an outdoor amphitheater that draws, I think, numbers approaching this on I-5? And I know on one-day events, if you go through on I-5, you won't get a motel room from Spokane to Seattle. So there is I think we have a comparative event. Are you familiar with that?
Chair Witt, Representative Dallum, I believe you may be. Are you talking about the Clark County Amphitheater by the fairgrounds? I'm a little familiar with that. I was actually working in Clark County prior to its actual development. They have made improvements to I-5 for that. The venue for that is much smaller than what's being anticipated here. And that the amphitheater is right on the edge of the urban growth boundary for Vancouver, so probably the folks either go down to Vancouver or they have to probably jump to Chehalis if they were looking for a hotel and that type of thing. So they probably move on both sides of the interstate, north and south.
You did, though. Thank you.
Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chairman. The question I would have is, I'd like a little bit of a comparison, this being in Boardman, which is kind of out in rural part of Oregon, where the road is not anywhere near capacity. Could you compare that event to, say, having a Olympics trial in Eugene, where we're going to have tens of thousands of people added to I-5? Which one would have more impact on highways?
Chair Witt, Representative Broad. I don't know that I could answer that one with regards to the amount of traffic. One thing we do know on I-84 is that when we do our analysis, we really look out as to what is the future need for a roadway out 20 years. I mean, that's how we do our planning. And so when we look at a project like this, we also have to look at what's the development that was anticipated along the entire corridor over the next 20 years, and then you add this to it and say, so what is the impact to the interstate? Something like the Olympics is, again, more of a short-term impact, so you would do different things versus something that is here in perpetuity.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'd like to just add a little bit to the questions as it relates to, because we went through a fairly extensive analysis on this report, which you have in front of you. The things that we took into account, which is required by the Department of Transportation, State of Oregon, is you have to look for the 20-year plan. You have to look at the impact analysis, and it's like a peak three-hour period for coming to the facility and exiting. And you cannot exceed the V over C ratios of the system, I think it's 72%. And so based on those kind of parameters, then a mitigation strategy is identified to accommodate those requirements. And that's what that study did and analyzed and determined what was necessary. There was some interchange improvements necessary. They reached out several interchanges in Oregon in both directions. This location, actually, the traffic will, in all probability, come almost equally from both directions. And so it's not just coming from Portland. You have Interstate 82 that's 15 miles to the east of us that feeds all of Washington coming down into Oregon there, and also east on 84 from Boise area. So we're going to get a good distribution, and it's not just coming from Portland. And so that's what makes this location even more attractive than, say, on the I-5 corridor, where I'm sure you currently meet those 72% of those V over C ratios as we speak today, because I'm sure that the state doesn't have a double standard. But anyway, just wanted to reiterate that we have done the analysis, and we believe that we're trying to do the things that are necessary to make this thing work to the best for the people in our region and the state of Oregon. So, thank you.
Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any or hearing any. Thank you, panel, very, very much.
Thank you.
We had a number of people from Monday's hearing who didn't have an opportunity to testify, and I don't know if they're in the audience today. Kate Kimball?
All by myself?
Well, I'm trying to...
I'm happy with that.
Let's see here.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Are you going to move this bill today? I'm going to request Friday, and that would impact some of the testimony you have.
Okay. I am. My intention is not to move this bill today.
Thank you very much.
Harlan Levy, please. Are you in the audience? Yes, he is. Okay. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Do you have a preference who goes first?
No.
Oh, I got the mic first.
Your coin toss.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Kimball, and I'm staff attorney at 1000 Friends of Oregon. And I expect you thought I would come here today to talk about the importance of complying with land use planning, and I do believe in that. But my mother once accused me of having the soul of an accountant, so I want to turn to the bill. My concern about this legislation is, even if you strongly support all the discussion I've heard the last Monday and some today, I have grave concerns about how this bill works, because I don't know in particular what laws are being waived and what laws are not. And I want to give you some examples so you know this isn't just frivolous on my part. One of the things you notice that's different in this bill is it talks about a master plan. And I had assumed that the master plan was replacing the existing land use planning system. But in Section 4.2, it talks about the master plan being submitted with the application. That, to me, suggests that it's adding a new layer of bureaucracy, which strikes me as being counter to what I've heard so far. So that's a concern of mine. If the master plan is, in fact, intended to replace the existing land use planning process, a number of things flow from that. I believe that it is a legitimate, although maybe not the best, interpretation that the master plan might waive all state and local requirements, because the master plan stands on its own as the method of approval. So it might be that the master plan waives the state and local transportation requirements, sanitation requirements, emergency services requirements. I'm not saying that I'm the final arbiter on that. I sure would feel a lot better if someone else, maybe from DOJ, looked at that. There are other things, such as conflicting terms. The term transient is defined from SB 1094. The destination resort language talks about overnight lodging, and they are geared to the same concept, but they have different definitions. So if the applicant plans on complying with the destination resort language, it's unclear to me which definition would apply in that case. One of the other things that is not clear to me is whether or not this is actually a land use decision process. And what flows from that are several things. One, it's not clear to me if it's not a land use decision that the county could apply an application fee to an application. In an application this size, it's a fairly sizable fee, and having worked with counties before, that's really helpful. I don't know if their fee ordinance would cover a master plan that's outside this process. I don't know if the notice and requirements, right to participate requirements under 197.763 apply. I don't know if LUBA jurisdiction applies, and that would be a benefit to the applicant because it provides faster, less expensive resolution of any kind of possible litigation. And from my point of view, one of the other important things is I don't know if the 120-day rule applies then because it's not a land use decision. So from my point of view, the laws I like least are the ones that are litigation magnets, and that's what I see here. That I've talked to Dave Allen a bit. It's not clear to me exactly what's being sought here, what the resolution is. But if I were trying to implement this, I would have a lot of serious questions about how to do it in a way that if I were representing the county or the applicant, I would feel that there was no liability attached to some of those decisions. So that's my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I think what we'll do is complete the testimony and have questions following Mr. Levy's comments. So if you would, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, here representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. We would like to express our support for this bill. We think that it is a good economic development measure, not only for Morrow County, not only for that region, but for the state of Oregon as a whole. You heard from the presentation the other morning about the number of jobs that are going to be created. You've heard that the locals have taken it upon themselves to create their own tax to finance this project. This project would put Eastern Oregon, in fact, it would put Oregon on the map. I am not a NASCAR fan, but I think it would be a great thing for the state of Oregon to have a track that would draw national attention. You heard from the applicant that the significant research that they have done, the market research, the analysis, that this thing is going to pencil out for them. And they've done a lot of work and put a lot of due diligence into putting this project together. So that's about all that I have to say, but I would hope that this committee would favorably consider this bill and move it to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, any questions for this panel? Yes, Representative
Dahl. My question is for you, Kate, and the Thousand Friends of Oregon is taking the stand that this legislation preempts county authority, and that is your concern?
I'm taking the position that I don't know what a master plan is because it's a new term in land use planning, and it looks as though it's intended to replace all our land use planning rules, and because of that, I'm not sure that the state or county have jurisdiction to do more than approve the master plan, and that approval only is required only if the master plan has all the elements in it. It's a non-discretionary, in essence, that if the master plan contains the elements listed in the bill, the county must approve it. That's a legal interpretation, and that's my testimony. Did that answer your question?
I think so, but I want to be sure. Uh-huh. I want to be really sure because I want to know where you. It's not the preemption. If there is a preemption that concerns you, it's the lack of a master plan or who authors the master plan.
It is the fact that the master plan may set aside all state and local rules.
And that so your concern is that we are giving another agency authority preempting the county or the land use process, and this issue may be very important at another time. And so I want to be crystal
right.
clear where Thousand Friends is on this issue.
And I want to make sure I understand your question for that reason. I'm not sure any agency has authority over this. That's my concern. That the way one could read this under Section 4 is that the Port of Morrow designee comes in with a master plan. The master plan has to have these elements, and the master plan has to be approved if those elements are addressed. So if you're trying to take this into a larger context, I don't know that I can, because I'm looking very much at the language.
I will take it to a larger context.
I am concerned that we're setting aside local and statewide land use planning, potentially under this bill.
So now I want to be crystal clear. You're concerned that we're setting aside state and local land use planning. I can quote you on that.
You make me very nervous when you ask that sort of thing.
I want to.
If you say that in the context of 665A, there was testimony that Thousand Friends was concerned that the bill set aside all planning requirements for this development, yes.
Thank you very much.
Why do I feel that I've stepped into something I don't fully understand?
Because that's where I've led you.
Yeah. That's so comforting, Representative.
Thank you very much.
We have paramedics in the back.
Yeah. Now, that is comforting.
Anyone else? Not seeing any further questions. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Is Billie Jean Morris here today? No. Or Jonathan Clark? And Jonathan, if you have anyone that you brought along, you can have them come up too.
Thank you, Representative Chair Witt. Bob Caspell. My name is Jonathan Clark. I am the Director of Business Development for Oregon Raceway Park in Grass Valley.
Bob Caspell, Oregon Raceway Park Construction Manager.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us. We're currently working with Representative Dahlem on an amendment, and so we're going to withhold any testimony at this time.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Dahlem, did you have any?
I might explain to the chair that I have visited with the bill's author, and we have an amendment. I went to Ledge Council this morning at 8, and it's not ready. And as soon as that's ready, I'll get it in the hands of the committee.
Okay, very good. Additional questions or comments? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify this morning that hasn't signed up? I know that Mr. Allen has passed a note that he desires to testify. Anyone else from the public? Not seeing anyone. Mr. Allen, would you like to come forward, please? Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be back. I want to address a couple of the concerns that have been raised both on Monday when I was here and again this morning. I think Mr. Neal has addressed the traffic as best we can, and Representative Holvey, I'm very cognizant of your concerns, and it's been an issue that we've spent quite a bit of time and money addressing. As I indicated on Monday, I can't guarantee that traffic may not be slow Sunday night after a NASCAR event. But I believe we've got traffic mitigation plans in place, and we look forward to working with ODOT. We recognize that the expanded development is going to require another layer of traffic impact analysis to analyze. We're hopeful that our business model will actually lessen those impacts and not worsen them, but we're very aware of those concerns, and we look forward to working with Department of Transportation on that. One of the issues I wanted to address with respect to the master planning, Ms. Kimball just testified regarding the intent of the bill. I think one of the difficulties in making sense of Senate Bill 665 is relying on the documents that have come before, and the two major documents that I would draw your attention to would be the 83 pages of local findings that Morrow County has already passed, gone through LUBA appeal, had a remand, addressed on remand, and then with no further LUBA appeal are now firm. So those are the background, if you will, of Senate Bill 1094. 1094 then came along and built in a nutshell, removed a lot of the restrictions regarding time, intensity, and scope of use regarding accessory and associated uses and facilities. And I mentioned on Monday that had in large part a lot to do with regards to hours of operation, advertising, and what types of uses were going to be allowed around the speedway. All those limitations were expanded by 1094. So I think when you read 665 by itself, I can understand the confusion from Thousand Friends of Oregon that this is somehow standing alone on its own, and the reality is it's not. It is a progression, if you will, of Senate Bill 1094 and a progression of those local findings, and we're still beholden to both the bill 1094 and those local findings. So I would encourage anyone that has confusion on this to read those documents as well. There may still be confusion, and I'd be more than happy to address any concerns in any future public hearings. The intent of 665 is not in any way, shape, or form to skirt the local land use planning process. That was not the intent, and if I've drafted it incorrectly, I will attempt to draft it more clearly. I've been working since Monday when we last met with Bob Rendy from DLCD. He sent me yesterday a page worth of comments that we're in the process now of addressing in further draft amendments. And those are related in general to the supporting uses and facilities and the scope of the project. With respect to the master planning, we haven't heard those concerns from DLCD, and I think they may be more aware of what our actual intent here is. Our intent is not to skirt the local land use planning process, but rather to have one local land use planning process where we lay out what our vision is, what we would like to build, what we would like to do, and with minimal interference after that, be allowed to begin proceeding with our development, such that we're not filing a separate land use application for each venue, for each store, for each road, for each piece of this project. We're going to plan it, approve it, hopefully, one time, and if there are LUBA appeals, we'll go through that process one time and deal with the remands. That's the spirit of the master planning here, is to be allowed to show where these various venues and uses will go, where the infrastructure will go, and allow some flexibility once those are hopefully approved to move venues around if we need to, with minor variations from, well, this was on the very westernmost boundary, we need to make it to the south to make this fit, to make this work. Those are the types of issues that we feel master planning will address. And the comment was, have you actually begged another layer of bureaucracy here by putting on master planning? My client will probably kill me by saying this, but the reality is we may have. And the idea here is actually to be good stewards of the land and good stewards of land use planning in Oregon and follow through and do something that makes sense rather than being caught in delays over and over again. The original draft of the bill, as you might recall, had a supersiding provision in it where the appeals would go directly to the Supreme Court. The -2 amendments that were referred out of the Senate removed that entire section. So it is not our intent, and we would submit, at least on this record, that any land use application that's filed at the local level in Morrow County, which there will be, would be subject to the ordinary land use planning processes of 120-day appeal or 120-day right to turn the application around, LUBA appeals, and all the other trappings that go with the land use planning process. So I wanted to make sure that we're clear that we are not attempting to skirt any other requirement. What we are simply trying to do, quite frankly, with the Speedway is expand what is right now a 1,400-acre site approval to a 2,600-acre site approval, recognizing, as I spoke on Monday, the fact that we can't fit all of these venues into one gigantic football stadium venue. We need to spread these out. The destination resort piece is tied to the Speedway. One of the other concerns that Mr. Rendy had raised and I'm addressing in the draft amendments is all of these associated and accessory uses are dependent on development of a Speedway venue, a major motor Speedway. That's the intent of the bill, as I expressed on Monday. Without a major motor Speedway, regardless of land use planning or what the bill says, the market won't support it. If we don't have an engine to bring people out there, it doesn't matter what we build, it will fail economically. So I'm more than happy to build that into the bill, and I've got proposed language that will be running by Mr. Rendy today and tomorrow with hopes of getting legislative council drafting on this in time for our hearing, our work session on Wednesday. So with that, I'd be welcome to any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. if you take a look at page 3 of the bill, section 4, subsection 3, and explain to me why that isn't exactly what Thousand Friends has said it is?
Thank you, Representative Riley, Chair Witt. The master planning process, I think to make sense of this, you need to make sure that you look at Section 2 as well, which says the master plan submitted with the application, the intent there, and I can certainly flesh that out and say master plan shall be submitted with a local land use application to make that more clear. That's not an issue that's been raised, quite frankly, for me until just this morning when I spoke with Ms. Kimball. But certainly it's our intent that this master plan be part of a local land use application process. The master plan process primarily talks about exceptions to statewide land use planning goals, and the primary goals that we're concerned about here. When Morrow County went through this process initially, as I indicated on Monday, this land has been zoned aerospace industrial for 20 or 30 years at that point. Back in the day, that land was accepted from agricultural Goal 3 uses. Mm-hmm. When we went through the local planning process, DLCD and a local citizen appealed and said, you have to re-justify accepting this land from Goal 3. You accepted it as a Cape Canaveral West, but we want to know why it should be accepted to be a speedway. LUBA agreed, and that's what the remand back to Morrow County was about. So we went through 20 pages of remand findings. Senate Bill 1094 basically said, we're not going to make you go through that process anymore. We recognize this is not resource land any longer. We're not going to make you go through this goal exceptions process. The other goals that become important on the goal exceptions process relate to public facilities, transportation, things of that nature. All of those issues, quite frankly, will be addressed within the land use application. That's what Section 4 then begins to address, is where are all these facilities going to go, what other capacities, and what is the need for these for your development. So without completely blowing up the bill and redrafting from scratch, I think maybe there can be some improvement to spell out exactly what I've just said, which is this will still be a local land use application with required notices, both to state agencies and the public, required hearings and things of that nature.
And I think that you're right. I think that that's what's required here. And your explanation is great. I'm not sure the bill says what you said, and that's the problem, I think.
Yeah. And I'll make a note of that in addition to my comments or my corrections that I'm making with Mr. Rendy.
Thank you. Representative Gerard?
Yeah, I'd just like to follow up on Representative Riley's kind of questions a little bit. You had a lot of people come in here and testify in favor of this, and there were some questions about if you were trying to skirt local jurisdiction and local land use laws. And it seems to me like with both Morrow County, the city, and the port all testified for it, I'm just trying to understand where the rub is with trying to skirt local jurisdiction.
Thank you, Representative Gerard and Chair Witt. I guess I'm just going to go back to my Eastern Oregon roots here and kind of just be frank. I think the reality is local input on these land use applications is going to be overwhelmingly in support of let's develop this land. It's not currently productive. It's not currently doing anything, quite frankly, other than a minimal airstrip for the Port of Morrow. The Port of Morrow is excited about the opportunity to relocate that airport, expand that airport, and have another resource for all the other issues that the port is engaged in with regards to industrial development and things that ports ordinarily do. The citizenry out there, number one, I think in large part are NASCAR fans, so that's a good backdrop. But I think in general, just economic development, and I hate to use that, it seems like we talk about economic development so much we kind of forget what that actually means. Having lived in Eastern Oregon, I can tell you exactly what that means. That means jobs. That means a quality of life and an ability to have a decent living in an area that you've grown up in, that your family's in, and that you would like to be able to stay. So I think the local testimony, quite frankly, will be in support. And it's one of the reasons, quite frankly, that we want to engage the local public, because we think that will support and bolster our record if there should be an appeal that Luba would ultimately see, wow, you know, person after person after person, overwhelmingly from a local standpoint, is in support of this project.
I got a quick follow-up comment. It's just, I come from a rural district, and obviously land use is a hot item out there. And LCDC oversees Luba, and the acronym for LCDC out there is Local Control Don't Count. So I think that when you got the county and the city and all the people, you know, the vast majority of the people in that region are crying for this, I think it's a good idea.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify for the record that I don't believe that you're trying to skirt local control. I just want to make sure that this bill doesn't set a precedent and do something, say something that you don't mean. And I believe that if we clear up that little bit of language, I think we'll be fine. But
I'll certainly make sure.
I just want to clarify it. I don't believe that your intent is to skirt local control. I just want to make sure that the bill doesn't.
I'm very concerned about that.
Thank you, Representative.
No agency has authority over this.
Mr. Allen, can you? You've heard a number of concerns, I think, voiced about whether or not there are an adequate number of motel rooms in the area. And can you comment on that? What your development plans envision, what's available in the area, and what may or may not develop?
Thank you, Chair Witt. The transient lodging, and I need to make sure I start using the right terms here, the destination resort has its own definition of that, and I don't want to get into ratio debates and things of that go along with the DR. The transient lodging piece of the bill is to allow some development of transient lodging to service the venues and the facility. We recognize there is absolutely no chance that we will ever be able to build enough hotel, motel, RV parks, camping sites, whatever you want to call it, to serve the level of demand that would be met by a premier sanctioned event being held at that facility. There's just no way. So what we hope to be able to do is to partner or encourage surrounding communities. You know, we talk a lot about Boardman. We certainly have talked about Hermiston and Tri-Cities. You know, I start thinking about, having driven that road more than once, communities like Arlington, Biggs, Rufus, other areas that are along the interstate, that there will certainly be opportunities for travelers' accommodations. And even though they may be seen as competitors, the state of Washington actually has abilities to develop across the river as well. So we don't have a comprehensive plan, if you will, of how we're going to address transient lodging needs over and above what we think that we can build into our site that will financially be supported. And quite frankly, we don't want to have a racetrack with 100 hotels around it. I mean, you know, that's the goal, is to provide a mixed-use venue, so there's recreational opportunities and other things that occur on there. So I wish I had more detailed information about, this is how many rooms we'll need, this is how many rooms are in the area. We've certainly begun to study that and spoken with different hotel corporations regarding developing on our land. But what we really envision is, this is an engine that's going to drive a market demand such that there might be opportunities to develop economically along the gorge, across the gorge, and in other areas that currently just can't support that.
And would you also comment, too, on the folks that are on the racing circuit and what kind of lodging many of those use?
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'm not a race car driver. I've never been part of a race team, but my understanding is a majority of the race teams actually are self-sufficient, and they travel by trailer and RV and things of that nature. They certainly will need lodging for their staff and drivers and things of that nature. You know, we're aware as well there will be media that will be requiring lodging. So to be perfectly honest, the lodging that we're going to be able to develop around the facility on a race weekend will primarily be serving a lot of that race going, the people that are coming to town with the race cars, with the corporate sponsors, with the media, things of that nature. A large sector of the fan base actually is RV-based. It's pretty amazing, the statistics. And we recognize, even with 15,000 RV spots currently approved, that isn't going to come close to addressing that need. So again, and I should mention, having been a resident of South Morrill County and in Heppner, the folks down there are anxious as well, and they ask me every time I go out there, what are our opportunities going to be to develop here? And I think that's a perfect opportunity for Heppner, or South Morrill County, if you will, to develop some of those types of lodging venues. And anyone that's been in the area, it certainly presents other recreational opportunities with respect to the outdoors and fishing and hunting. And Morrill County is very proud of their OHV park that they have south of Heppner as well. So there are lots of opportunities there. So I'm not sure I'm addressing your question as specifically as you'd like, and I apologize, I don't have any specific numbers to address that.
Well, I think you've hit the highlights. Thank you very much. Additional yes, Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is a really intriguing concept, and you keep mentioning the one-day event, and having been to a NASCAR event myself, I recognize that they're really not one-day events. Notwithstanding that, in your business model for looking at this, how many events does a NASCAR facility like this have in a year?
That's
how often do they have events?
Thank you.
You've got to have some sort of idea of that to figure out if this pencils out economically.
All right. Thank you, Representative Holvey and Chair Witt. It's varied across the NASCAR landscape, if you will. What I refer to as the Kansas model, and I'm actually a born and raised Jayhawk here, so I'm familiar with Bonner Springs and what it was when I was a kid and what it is now. The Kansas model was, they took a field, they built a racetrack, they put a few things around it and said, there you go. They've got one weekend a year where they have a Busch Series race, a Craftsman Truck Series race, and a NASCAR Nextel Cup Series race. That's it for NASCAR, one race. They also have an IRL race that is there. I can't remember if it's IRL or CART, but an Indy Racing League or an open wheel, what we call an open wheel event there as well. And then they have several events throughout the year that are what we would call second or third tier sanctioning body events. So I think if you took a look at the actual schedule of the Kansas Motor Speedway between May and September, they may have anywhere from 5 to 10 events, two or three of which we would call premier sanctioned events, that being the IRL, the NASCAR type series. One of the things I mentioned before on Monday was the concept of a test facility. And so we recognize certainly when we pencil these things out, that these facilities have use over and above NASCAR or even sanctioned events. It's one of the reasons we're excited about the road course, is that the road course can accommodate these major premier sanctioned events on the one or two or three weekends a year we might be lucky enough to get one of those sanctioned events. But the remainder of the year, there are uses that those road courses support, both from the private membership model that we have developed, which, by the way, is the same model that I believe they're pursuing in Sherman County at the Grass Valley Project, but also from a corporate sponsorship level. Those road courses, they end up having driving schools where Porsche or BMW, whoever wins the contract, supplies 20 to 30 vehicles, and there's a race car instructor. And corporations will do retreats where the first half of the day is driving instruction. You learn how to go fast, how to go slow, and hopefully not wreck. And then the second half of the day is time trials, where the folks that are there for the corporate retreat throw money in a hat, I'm assuming, and have a race. And then the corporations use that event, that experience, then to lead into that evening and the next day's leadership training and executive trainings. They found them to be highly successful for motivational tools for the corporation, and the tracks that are around in America found them very profitable as well. So I think the NASCAR track, ironically, would probably see the least amount of use, just because it is what it is. There aren't a whole lot of people that are going to get on a high bank speedway and try and do 200 miles an hour. I'm not voting for that, although I think Senator Atkinson is bucking for the first drive around the racetrack if that ever gets there. So, but the other venues, quite frankly, would see more use than the NASCAR track. Certainly the road course, the 5/8 mile oval, things that you're going to start seeing regional use. One of the other markets that we've explored is, you know, we've looked, obviously, we're interested in folks investing in the project, and we've targeted and approached local racing bodies, and the folks that we've talked to, I mean, I just can't believe this. There's folks that have, you know, $250,000 sports cars that they load up into a trailer. They leave Vancouver or Portland early in the morning, drive all the way to San Francisco to get to a road course to race for a weekend, only to haul it all the way back. And PIR is full as well. Every single person I've talked to in those sanctioned bodies has told me is that there are just not enough tracks, that if we built a track that was capable of holding an event to their specs, as far as what I talked about on Monday, condition of the pavement and turns, and it was a safe course, that all they're all regional. Seattle has its kind of group of people. Portland has its group of people, and on down the Western Seaboard and Boise and Salt Lake as well. So I think we're going to see a varied amount of use depending on the type of venue, and certainly the destination resort along the river would generate its own type of, hopefully, day in day out use. Long answer to a short question, but I apologize.
Representative
Gerard. Just a quick question and a quick point. One is the question being, are you going to have any quarter mile events? And number two, if you do get this, I think that we should have a lottery. I'd like to compete.
Thank you, Representative Gerard. Chair Witt. I'll make sure and pass that along to both the mayor of Nelsonville and to Senator Atkinson. The quarter mile is not currently in the plans. What we have is a 5/8 mile oval, and by quarter mile, I'm not sure if you're asking drag, about actually drag racing. Yeah. There is a drag strip in the map that I provided you all on Monday. It doesn't look very big because it's just a thin little ribbon of pavement. That's basically what a drag strip is. That, quite frankly, with our current model, after the road course would be the next to be built because the infrastructure costs are minimal. It's one strip, a quarter mile of pavement with some associated aprons and pads for the racers and then the stands that go along with it. NHRA is big in the Northwest because there is a presence in the Northwest, and we're hoping to build upon that and get a presence for some of these other sanctioning bodies.
Since we're talking about the various aspects of the plan, I notice you have a dirt track. Mm-hmm. I have friends who drive outlaw cars, and are you going to join the outlaw circuit and the short track circuit there?
The findings that were approved by Morrow County list out all of the sanctioning bodies that would qualify as a premier sanctioned event for purposes of triggering both the excise tax and some of the financing agreements we have with the Port of Morrow, and World of Outlaws is one of the sanctioning bodies that's listed.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Riley. I was going to ask the same question. anything further? Not seeing anything, Mr. Allen. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Committee members.
Do the last and final call for the public testimony on Senate Bill 665A. Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on that bill. Committee members, any additional business to come before us today? Not hearing any. Ellen, would you please give us a preview?
Thank you, Chair Witt. Members of the committee, on Friday, May 25th at 8 a.m. in Hearing Room C, you'll be having your first public hearing on Senate Bill 725, which prohibits discrimination against disabled persons and discrimination due to race, color, sex, marital status, source of income, familial status, and various other protected status by multiple listing service, real estate brokers, organizations, or other services, organizations, or facilities relating to the business of selling or renting dwellings. And you'll be having a work session on Senate Bill 492, which renames the Oregon State Boxing and Wrestling Commission as the Oregon State Athletic Commission. And then I would just remind you that on Monday, May 28th, it's Memorial Day, and the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development will not be meeting on that day.
Thank you very much. From dirt tracks and outlaws to housing and non-discrimination, you've heard it all right here. And with that, we stand adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We've had an agreement from the Senate.
Thank you very much.
You're
welcome. No, that's